So in place, this is kind of a tradition here on this Sunday after the new year, that we have, instead of a reading, we have another song, and I always spend a lot of time trying to find one that will fit. So this year, the song that I found is by Doug Seegers, who actually less than a year ago was singing under a bridge, homeless in Nashville, Tennessee. Until he was heard. Now in Sweden, apparently, they're huge country fans. And so they would come over to Nashville, and he was heard singing on the street by these two Swedish recording artists one afternoon. You can watch it on YouTube. I encourage you to go check it out. Doug Seegers Found. You just put that in and it will come up. And this couple took him the next day to the recording studio, and he has been touring ever since. Including two shows in Somerville in the fall, and an interview on WBUR On Point, which is when I heard him. The song he was playing on the street that day, the one that he wrote, is called Going Down to the River, and it will be played by, this is our whimsy band. I think they've renamed themselves.
On a whim.
On a whim. Go to it.
I'm going down to the river to wash my soul again. I've been running with the devil, and I know he's not my friend. I've been falling by the wayside, living in this world of sin.
I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again.
I'm going down to the country to bury my head in a creek. I'm gonna jump in the water and baptize both my feet. 'Cause everywhere I've been walking, I'm getting in trouble deep. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again.
Well, this old world's gonna have in a handbasket if I don't get some restoration soon. Gonna end up in a casket. Ooh.
To the river,
gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul again. I'm going down to the river, gonna wash my soul.
Just go have coffee. Just let's call it a day. That's right. That's right. Well, it just are not words. You, amazing job. Amazing. Al, in particular, I'll email them and I'll say, hey, here's the YouTube link. And my family's been suffering that song, right, for ages, right? And Al just says, we'll make it work. And that's like a couple of rehearsals, so that is incredible. Let's take it on the road together. So let us, my friends, have compassion for everyone that we meet, even if they do not want it. For what seems conceit or bad manners or cynicism is always a sign of things that no ears have heard and no eyes have seen. You don't know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. So forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So I chose the song that we heard, the one that the Whimsy Band, the name is growing on me, because of the opening lines of Doug's. He says, I'm going to go down to the river to wash my soul again. I've been running with the devil, and I know he's not my friend. I've been falling by the wayside, living in this world of sin. I'm going down to the river to wash my soul again. Doug was writing here of his life of homelessness and his struggles with addiction and his plaintive call for redemption. All of his music is infused with this religious spirit. But I heard the lyrics and I'm thinking, you know, I know that. I know that call. I know that cry. Because, you know, we live in a world where the world seems to have fallen by the wayside sometimes. And do you feel like your spirit gets muddy? Do you feel like you want your spirit to be wiped clean? I do. And it's in the spirit of reflecting on the ways that our souls get dirty on the one hand and can get clean on the other that I offer, this is my 12th installment of the top 10 religious news stories, this for the year of 2014. So are your seats in the upright position? Is your tray table closed? Are your seat belts fastened? And as we take off for the tour, a reminder that mine is a free pulpit, and yours is a free pew, which means that I get to speak my mind and my spirit, and you, if you need to, get to disagree with me. So deep breath in with me, and deep breath out. Number 10, Jesus is the original hipster. And did you know that he even poses for selfies? We live in an age when 9 churches close their doors every single day in America. And millennials and others in the smartphone generation are more inclined to ask, you know, isn't there an app for that I can just, you know, punch in? As opposed to look to a place like this to nourish their spirits. What are religious leaders going to do about that? Well, if you're the Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn, New York, and if you're looking out your stained glass windows into a community where there are 1.4 million Catholics, but only 200,000 of them attend any one of the 189 churches on any given Sunday, how about you create an advertisement? It's a whole series that shows Jesus all bearded up before that was cool, and he's got in the ads these big plastic glass frames, glasses, right? Big chunky ones. And he's got red Converse high tops underneath his robes. And underneath that ad is this caption, "Walking on land? Question mark. Too mainstream. I walk on water." And another one, same picture, my favorite, says, "Turned water into craft beer." True. Another ad shows a Brooklyn woman in her 20s. She's got a nose ring, and she's got the big, thick, chunky glasses just like Jesus's. And she's showing a selfie that she just took with Jesus in the background behind her. And at the top of the caption, it reads, "It's never just a selfie." Meaning that in a culture that celebrates me over the we, you are never truly alone. Now, as a former Catholic, I was an altar boy. I really considered the priesthood for a while. I love what the tradition gave me, even though I don't jive with the theology. But I am full of praise and, yes, even envy for the ways this diocese is trying to reach a younger and more diverse demographic, reminding folks that, number one, you don't have to take yourself so seriously to be a person of faith. Earnestness is, it's kind of a drag. And two, Jesus, and maybe much of religion, stands as a counterpoint to the culture, to the mainstream, a virtue that many young and not so young people claim to appreciate. So what would it be like, I'm thinking, if our church were to reach out to people in new ways? Maybe ads that say, "Live music and spoken word and free coffee Sunday mornings." Or, "White steeples are the new black." Or, "Living counter to the culture since 1685. My point is this: we ought never be satisfied, never, with the status quo. Better to ask, who is missing? Look around the pews. Who is missing? And let us go from there. All right, number 9. "Hey, can I get a larger popcorn and a Coke to go along with that Bible?" I have fun with these titles, you can tell. So pop quiz for you. How many of the top 15 highest U.S. grossing movies of all time, adjusted for inflation, star comic book characters? 0. How many of those top grossing adjusted for inflation movies of all time are based on the Bible? 2. 10 Commandments and Ben-Hur teamed up for $1.8 billion in adjusted domestic ticket sales, which is more than Avatar, The Dark Knight, and Transformers combined. So in 2014, the tradition continued with Russell Crowe as Noah and Christian Bale as Moses. So, you know, if the Brooklyn Diocese can't reach a younger audience, maybe Hollywood can do it for us. Consider this 2014 release schedule. On February 28th, 20th Century Fox opened with Son of God, a Jesus biopic, culled from History Channel's hit 2013 miniseries, The Bible. Paramount came next with Noah, the epic reimagining of the life of Hebrew Bible's most famous boat builder. In March, the film God Is Not Dead debuted, raking in $60 million as audience clamored to see the film about the devout Christian college student who must prove the existence of God or else his college philosophy professor will fail him. I haven't seen that, but I really want to go see it. In April came Heaven Is For Real, about the dad who's a minister of a boy who claims to have experienced the afterlife after a near-death experience. And then just in time for the holidays, the Mother of God drama Mary, starring Ben Kingsley and Julia Ormond, opened right along with Ridley Scott's Exodus. How many of us have seen any of those movies? Just raise your hand. Wow, like a significant, no, I can't, I haven't seen them either, so, but that's just good for us to notice. Other faith-based projects in the pipeline include Cain and Abel movie directed by Will Smith, and a film on Pontius Pilate, and guess who's playing Pontius Pilate? Brad Pitt. So I've only seen one of these, Heaven Is For Real. It was Friday night, movie night with the family and pizza, and it was the only one we could all agree on. So I'm left remarking on things that I don't really know much about, but that's no different, right? But I wonder, if they say that violent movies make people more violent, my question is, will religious movies make people more religious? It's a fair question. And does anyone think it's ironic that the conservative religious types who often critique the violence in mainstream media sound like crickets when watching Noah? Because, I mean, in that movie, God basically commits mass genocide, and no one says a thing. Meanwhile, the Bible will go on as the most owned, most watched, and most unread book in America. How do I know this? Because the stat still stands that 40% of Americans can name only 5 of the 10 commandments, and 12%, my friends, believe that Joan of Arc is Noah's wife. 12%. True. And I see some of you going, I thought that she was. Most problematic is that a full 3/4 of Americans, that means that maybe 3 out of 4 of you sitting here this morning believe that the line, God helps those who help themselves, which is an uber individualistic American idea originally penned by Ben Franklin, is from the Bible. 3/4 of Americans believe that. Few ideas could be further from the gospel message with its call for radical love of neighbor. Do you see now why I urge us to read this book? Do you understand why? At the very least, it means we can go to a movie and say, you know what? The book is better. And point out when folks who claim to be biblically centered are radically wrong. We have a responsibility, you and I. Okay, number 8, prayers with feet. Imagine this, Noah's ark lurched. An inflatable mosque in a Hindu temple bounced alongside the ark as pagan drums sounded. And alongside all of it are Hare Krishnas dancing next to a bunch of Unitarian Universalists with yellow t-shirts that read, standing on the side of love. On Sunday, September 21st, more than 10,000 people of faith huddled together in Columbus Circle in Manhattan, waiting to join the largest yet show of public will to address climate change, largely in response to the environmentalist Bill McKibben, who in a Rolling Stone article made the call and said, if the Bible means anything, Bill, who is a practicing Methodist, if the Bible means anything, it means that we need to care for the world that God has given us. 400,000 went to the march. 30,000 attended the interfaith service held there, which for all the dire warnings around climate change also had an air of hopefulness. We will overcome, that famous civil rights song, broke out in a chorus in that service, and some held signs saying, pessimists, don't attend marches. We gather because our theology says something can and must be done, and we are agents of change. Earlier that summer and later that fall, religious leaders of all stripes led peaceful protests against racial injustice in Ferguson, 8 miles from where I grew up, and the New York City police shooting of unarmed black men. Clergy and faith-based groups' peaceful response stood in stark contrast to the violent outbursts happening in their midst, including most recently the assassination, which is the only word for it, of two officers in their car in New York City. And then after the 16-hour hostage-taking by a so-called, and I use that word intentionally, Muslim extremist in Sydney earlier this month, resulting in the death of four, some Muslims in Sydney used social media to report that they were scared to get on public transportation because of possible retaliation. Sydney resident Rachel Jacobs urged a woman who she saw taking off her hijab, "Put it back on," she said, "I will ride with you." And then took to Twitter with the hashtag "I'll ride with you" to urge others to ride with Muslims who may be traveling alone in religious garb. And within hours of Rachel's tweet, it had been retweeted 120,000 times, giving Muslims and the rest of us a way to stand up against Islamophobia and religious bigotry. Proverbs, speaking of scripture, says it so well. It says, "Pray and then move your feet," which means that we can't be people of faith unless we use our bodies to express our values. Or to put it another way, less lips, more hips. I think I've coined that phrase now. Let's keep moving. Number 7. How we doing? We're going to be here a little while today. Who said Nathaniel Hawthorne is old? Or clergy don the scarlet letter? So sigh with me. Do you know one of the nicest things about my travels over this holiday season was, aside from the 80 degrees that I felt on my back in Curacao, which I mentioned just to make you a lot jealous? The nicest thing was that not once was I asked, "What do I do for a living?" Because every time that I end up having to apologize for a clergy I don't know, churches I don't belong to, or religions that I don't claim. Every single time. Among the clergy that people have asked me to explain, as if I would know, are, and they say, "Did you hear of so-and-so? This is why I don't go to church." Mark Driscoll, who built a church and publishing juggernaut amid blunt talk of sex and strict Calvinism and male authority, resigned under fire from his Seattle-based congregation when he was accused of bullying and misappropriating donations. And then Bill Gothard, who's a prominent speaker, another advocate for male authority, and faith-based homeschool movement leader, resigns as the president of the Basic Life Principles Institute after his board learned of sexual harassment accusations against him by more than 30 women. And then in late September, on a Monday morning, my phone rings at home, my cell phone. It's from the dean of Andrew Newton Theological School, where I serve as adjunct faculty. And it's about 2 hours before my Unitarian Universalist worship class. I have 30 students I did in the fall. And she's calling me, Sarah's calling me to tell me that as she's talking to me, the new president, Martin Copenhaver, who is the minister at Wellesley Village Church, it's a big, big one, right in the center of town over there, is telling the students as I'm talking to Sarah that he has just confessed to having an extramarital affair for 4 years. And he only owned up to it when he's confronted by a board member. And so in contrast to the other examples, Martin has kept his job. The dean saying to the students later that day, "We have a theology for this. We believe in redemption. We believe in forgiveness. And we are reminded that ministers are flawed people too." To which I say, of course, amen. And still, I will admit that I read Martin's words that I've loved. I have all of his books on my shelf. I read those words with a different, more wary eye. Like, I don't quite believe him when he tells me in a sermon to tell the truth. Do we hold our clergy, like our public officials, to a higher standard than other people? And the answer to that is absolutely yes, which is why I told the students that day that this calling expects us to be better than we otherwise might be. But let me just pause here, and you know, it's time for halfway through almost. How about some of the best one-liners of the year? From John Stewart, sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel is just New Jersey. Sorry, New Jersey. And from Stephen Wright, what's another word for thesaurus? Okay, back to it. Number 6, can we please stop calling Hobby Lobby a Christian company? This summer, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Hobby Lobby, a retailer owned by a conservative Christian family that objected to paying for certain contraception coverage that it deems akin to abortion, saying that it violated their religious freedom. There's so much to say and to think on the story. Karen was raging around the house for weeks after this broke, but here are just two things. Because the court did not explicitly name Hobby Lobby's First Amendment claim, the disturbing trend of seeking religious license to discriminate in the Constitution's free speech protections is going to continue, my friends. In some states, opponents of homosexuality have tried to argue that Christian caterers should be subject to discrimination laws if they don't accept gay customers. Sooner or later, the court must reinforce that a business owner's religious beliefs do not create a legal reason to violate a worker's rights. And 2, can we please stop calling Hobby Lobby, a company that makes most of its items in China, where the minimum wage is $9 a day and child labor is rampant, a Christian company? Because if you're going to live by that label, you're going to have to explain how Jesus' calls for economic justice and concern for the least of these somehow doesn't apply to your business deals with companies who allow us to buy those cheap gnomes and wicker baskets for next to nothing. Can we stop allowing the Christian label, my friends, to be taken from us without a challenge? Or the religious label, we just give it away to them. Number 5, frocked, defrocked, and then frocked again, while a new kind of frock fits under that mitre hat. So last year I told us the story of Reverend Frank Schaefer, who was defrocked from the Methodist ministry after officiating at the wedding of his gay son, but frockless but not feckless, Frank went on to the road preaching in any religious community that would have him, including some of our own Unitarian Universalist ones, how he felt called to bless his son's union and how that calling was stronger than any church teaching. At the same time, he appealed the decision of his defrocking to the Methodist Church's Supreme Court, the existence of which is really a story of its own. After 6 months of testimony and deliberation, which, by the way, is about how long the case against the Marathon bombing is going to take, apparently, the church's top court upheld Schaefer's appeal in acknowledging that some within the church do not support the outcome. Frank has since taken up a new ministry position in Santa Barbara, California. Meanwhile, across the pond, the Church of England ended centuries, as in from 1534 until a couple weeks ago, of male-only leadership in the church when it named Reverend Libby Lane as the Bishop of Stockport. She's an Oxford graduate, and she's a keen supporter of Manchester United football, which is not an insignificant attribute in England. She was first ordained, one of the first women to be ordained in 1994, the first year that the church ordained women. And she's expected to be fast-tracked into the House of Lords in the new year with PM David Cameron's encouragement. Hearing all of this, the Queen, who is not known for her demonstrative emotional outbursts, was heard to be smiling at the news. Number 4, Ebola. I was 24 years old and waiting to hear of the country the Peace Corps would assign me to. And the first country I was offered was Namibia in Africa. And that was 1994. And at that time, the country was in the midst of its own Ebola outbreak. And without telling me no, my mom said to me, "Nathan, no." So I waited for my next assignment. This year, as Ebola has exploded in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, and infecting as of yesterday, as I looked, 20,381 people and killing 7,989, the parents and the spouses and the families of healthcare workers responding to the disease have needed to offer a response other than no. And for that, they are owed a tremendous amount of praise and thanks. It is no accident, I think, that many of the responders were religious missionaries, including Dr. Kent Brantley, Nancy Reitbull, and Massachusetts native Rick Sacra, three of the some 900 doctors that Samaritan's Purse sends to Africa every year to work in missionary hospitals, all three of whom contracted the disease and were successfully treated back in the U.S. Sacra is planning to go back to Liberia in a couple weeks. We would also be remiss if we didn't mention Sandy, Becky Shebley's, Hall's husband, who is here, who went to West Africa this fall serving as a nurse and only just returned 3 weeks ago. So say, my friends, with me one word, courage.
Courage.
Meanwhile, after Liberian immigrant Eric Duncan contracted Ebola and traveled to Dallas, ultimately dying in the hospital there, in the days and the weeks after his death, the community of Vickery Meadows, where Duncan had stayed prior to the hospital, going to the hospital, that community began to be ostracized by everyone around them for fear that others in the community would be infected. Food was short, and volunteers to help Duncan's family could not be found. Then Pastor Brent Berry of the local North Park Presbyterian Church raised his hand and led an interfaith coalition of churches and temples that pledged to stand by the people of Vickery Meadows. And after his church got involved, the pastor reported that the vacant volunteer spots had suddenly filled up. So when people say they don't believe in religion or attend church because of bad actors in ministry, now I will tell them of Reverend Brent Berry, and you should too. Brent, praise, and thank you for wiping my soul clean. Number three, finding compassion in a trying land. The words I have been using all year to open my sermons, the ones that begin, "Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it," come from a combination of Leonard Cohen and the poet Millar Williams. I wonder if they'd be able to offer those words if they were watching the news in the Middle East this year. So this year we saw the rise of ISIS, the barbaric beheadings put on YouTube. We saw the never-ending Palestinian-Israeli conflict that saw more than 2,100 Palestinians killed and 72 Israelis. And then we saw in Pakistan just a few weeks ago the Taliban going into the school and killing all of those children, 126. In revenge for the schoolgirl activist Malala receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. The region seems to be like on fire. And here in this country, we've heard the news for so long that if we're not careful, we will forget where the soft part of our heart is. But then Krista Bryant, who's a Christian Science Monitor reporter, tells the story of the time this summer when she visited a Palestinian home that had just been destroyed for the second time in 2 years. And she visited the home and she crunched across the floor of broken glass and mangled pots and floor tiles and red polka dot cupcake holders. And she made her way with the matriarch to the garden outside the house, which was untouched. And standing under the trellis, the family picked grapes for her. And then they gave her figs. And then they pointed over there to the corner to the rose bush, where one of the daughters loved to come on ceasefire days and pluck a blossom of hope. And as Krista turned to leave, the matriarch reached out to her and gave her something. That something was a rose. It was the last rose that she had. Soft heart. Number two, let us stretch those quad muscles because it's time to stand with black and brown-skinned people. African-American brothers and sisters, especially brothers, in this country are more likely to be arrested or to be executed or to be killed. So it's the kind of statement, this is a quote, that's often cited by black clergy. But hours after the grand jury on December 3rd chose not to indict New York City police officer who put Eric Garner into a fatal chokehold, saying before his death, "I cannot breathe," these words that I just quoted from you come from none other than Russell Moore, who is a white Southern Baptist church leader. With back-to-back grand jury decisions that white officers will not face charges on the deaths of unarmed black men, white people, especially white religious people, have grown more vocal in their urging of their churches, our churches, to help bridge the country's racial divides. Or in other words, this isn't just Ferguson's work or New York City work or black people's work. This is our work for those of us who have white skin. And that work, my friend, starts with us really owning up to our own white privilege, how by virtue of our skin color, my experience is different. It's different than people whose skin is black or brown. So here in Metro West Boston, we are called to listen to what the black community is saying, what they are going through, what they experience. This means that we leave the sermon today and we find a way to listen to some of these experiences, not speak to them, not assess them, not critique them, but just to cup our hands around our ears and to listen to them. Find the website when you get home today of a black church and listen to some of the sermons. Watch or listen to a news channel that is geared towards black folks. Open a conversation with a friend or coworker, because as President Obama has said, when any part of the American family does not feel like it's being treated fairly, that's a problem for all of us. It's not just the problem for some. All right, you've made it to number one. How are we feeling? Always preach the good news, and when necessary, use words. These words from St. Francis of Assisi have been at the bottom of my email byline since August, and they will be for the rest of the year, because in a world, as Doug Seeger sings, as our whimsy band sang for us, that often seems to be running headlong with the devil, we need to go down to the river to wash our soul again. And if religion is not preaching the good news and offering us a cleansing that we need, then it's either fallen down in its core mission, or we're not looking hard enough. So here to close, a river of good news to bathe in. Pope Francis continues to act like a universalist by preaching a message of inclusion and welcome, saying that inside every Christian is a Jewish person, asking the bishops to consider how to welcome gay, lesbian, and divorced Catholics, turning an investigation into American nuns he inherited from his predecessor into an opportunity to praise them, playing a crucial role, because he's not tired yet, in mediating a new thaw between Cuban and American relations, and if that weren't enough, ingratiating himself to pet lovers everywhere by telling a young boy who had just lost his dog that, "My son, all creatures will be welcomed into the new creation together." My golden retriever, upon hearing the news from NPR, looked at me and said, "Can't we just be a little Catholic?" Meanwhile, Malala, the Pakistani schoolgirl who made my list last year for standing up to the Taliban because they tried to kill her for advocating education, became the youngest person in history to receive a Nobel Peace Prize. Next, Los Angeles-based Deacon Scott Klassen received his Episcopal ordination in a laundromat, as part of Laundry of Love, a program in which homeless people or anyone in need may drop by to do their laundry for free with quarters, soap, and machines provided. And last, to bathe in Sama Ada, who was prohibited by soccer referees in Aurora, Colorado for playing a game due to her hijab. And her teammates at the Overland High School girls soccer team protested the decision by each donning the head covering and posting their photo on Twitter. This congregation, all of you, wash my soul clean all the time. And there are so many other stories of redemption and hope that will help bring some shine to your spirit and shine to your world in the midst of headlines that can seem dark and muddy. So all we have to do is go down to the river and step into the waters. And one of those springs is in this room. It's right here in this congregation. So please accept my invitation for you to wade in with me, because together we can wash the soul of our little corner of this holy earth, I believe. Happy New Year. Let us say amen.